morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 19. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission alleges corruption at the National Elections Commission.
The commission does not act on perception. The commission does not act on ESA evidence. The commission acts on the doctrine of best evidence. So what we've done is that the pieces of evidence we have in our possession, based on an allegation, the commission will investigate.
Malawi's anti-corruption body says corruption in the country continues unabated. Kenyan authorities apprehend three terror convicts who escaped a maximum security prison. Cameroon says government workers are rejecting COVID-19 vaccines, and the death toll of an attack on Burkina Faso's military rises to 53.
Politically, we say that President Kabore has failed in his responsibilities. He took an oath to protect the Burkinabe people, who he has failed, so we think he has to leave.
And Cape Verde turns to technology to revive its tourism industry. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission says it is investigating the entire leadership of the National Elections Commission, also known as NEC, for purchasing or renting several thermometers at the cost of $180,000 to use for the just concluded by-elections in four of Liberia's 15 counties. The chair of the Anti-Corruption Commission, Edwin Clark-Martin, says the commission has told all seven commissioners of the Elections Commission and other senior executives to submit statements starting today, November 19. Elections Commission Chairperson Divietta Brown-Lansana declined to be interviewed pending the investigation. Anti-Corruption Commission Chair Claire Martin denies his commission is conducting a selective investigation.
The Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission received information or complaint from concerned citizens and individuals who are protected by us, and sometimes from the press reportage. And once information of that nature is received, the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission, through its intelligent arm, will conduct its own due diligence. And after it shall have gathered sufficient evidence and sight to establish probable cause, the commission will now and then invite all those who are connected with the allegation of theft, misappropriation, misuse of public funds, and other crimes that are cognizable before our law.
And so, Mr. Martin, did you invite the National Elections Commission? Because my understanding is that the Elections Commission had no prior knowledge of you issuing this statement.
The invitation was sent before the statement was issued. Corruption matters are not matters that are kept under the carpet. So we have sent out a formal invitation, and based upon that invitation and for the public to know that what the Liberia Anti-Corruption is doing, we have to give a release as to the nature of our investigation, because it involves an allegation of corruption that will not be investigated under the carpet.
We are talking about $180,000. Some people say that your commission is picking and choosing who to prosecute, because they say there are even larger amounts of money that other departments of governments have allegedly spent, but they were never cited by your commission.
The commission does not act on perception. The commission does not act on ESA evidence. The commission acts on the doctrine of best evidence. So what we've done is that the pieces of evidence we have in our possession, based on an allegation, the commission will investigate. So people have alleged, but they have not brought that to the commission, supported by evidence. Since I took over at the LACC on the July 22nd, my investigation has been transparent and unambiguous, and the public can attest to that. We have invited key public officials to the commission to answer questions as to allegations of theft and corruption. So I wouldn't dwell on the fact that people say, in my own opinion, it's not the best evidence. But if the evidence are being adduced and we don't go after the complaint, then that would be a justifiable ground to say that we are picking and choosing. But no, we are going after allegations that have been supported by facts and evidence. And once we have that within our domain, we'll not hesitate to investigate. And once there are justifiable reasons to show that, yes, indeed, the act was committed, we'll go for prosecution.
Thermometers are supposed to measure temperature. And then some people will say, in the wake of the COVID-19, it's appropriate for the National Elections Commission to purchase these thermometers. So are you against the purpose of the thermometers or the cost?
The government of Liberia and the citizens of Liberia are adherents of the rules of COVID prevention. We are not against the procurement of the thermometers. What we are concerned about is the cost and the procurement regime, whether or not it will procure through the PPCC process, that means the Public Procurement Commission, and whether there was no inside trading as to an individual within the commission establishing its own company and sourcing that to the commission. Those are issues that we need to clarify, and those are issues that call for investigation. We are not speaking. We are transparent at this Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. I can boast on that much about it.
Mr. Martin, it's a pleasure to speak with you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Edwin Clamartin is chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. You are speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Malawi's anti-corruption body says official corruption continues to rise in the country, with complaints doubling in the past year. ACB Director Martha Chizuma says if the trend continues, Malawi will never reach its development goals. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Chizuma was speaking Wednesday at the start of a two-day-long national symposium aimed to find strategies to end corruption in Malawi. She told reporters it is worrying that people entrusted to fight corruption are those allowing it.
Sad to say is that there are people who are put in position of public trust, and they're the ones who are probably abusing that trust and committing corrupt acts. The way they're doing it is quite sophisticated.
She gave no further details as to which state institutions are committing corrupt acts or what she meant by the corruption being sophisticated. Chizuma said the complaints our bureau receives have almost doubled in the past year.
When you look at the statistics, the actual statistics that we have in the office, we see that 2019-2020, we had about 650 complaints. But now you see that in 2020-2021, we have 1,200 complaints.
Chizuma warns if the trend continues, Malawi will never reach its development goals.
Corruption takes away money for roads, money for schools. So basically what we are saying is that the money that we are stealing through corruption right now, we are literally stealing the aspirations in 2063, aspirations in Malawi implementation plan, the 10-year plan, the 2030 sustainable development goals. We are literally stealing that.
President Lazarus Chakwera has long said his administration is committed to end corruption by arresting anyone involved. In August, the ACB arrested three officials of the governing Tonse Alliance in connection with a fraudulent fuel supply contract at the National Oil Company. Political analyst Vincent Kondowe told VOA that Chizuma's statement shows that ACB is still struggling to bring corrupt officials under control.
For me, that is indicative that there is corruption happening in this government and she's finding it difficult to deal with it. Otherwise, I couldn't have imagined that she could have complained about that. But she has clearly indicated that there is a gap between rhetoric and action.
Participants at this week's conference discussed the need to implement new strategies. One idea is to establish courts specifically designed to prosecute cases of corruption. Rudolf Schwenk is acting resident coordinator for the UN Development Program in Malawi.
There is a very good strategy that has been designed, and with all strategies, there has to be action, and there has to be genuine action. So I do think there's hope for the people of Malawi to have a more efficient governance mechanism if we take concrete steps to fight corruption in the country.
The symposium ended Thursday with a call to all stakeholders to take a leading role in the fight against corruption in the country. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Kenyan authorities say they have captured three convicted terrorists who escaped Monday from a maximum security prison in Nairobi. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan authorities say they have captured three convicted terrorists who escaped Monday from a maximum security prison in Nairobi. The three convicts were arrested in Kitui County, central Kenya, after residents reported suspicious-looking people to the local authorities. The three convicts include Musharraf Abdallah, who was convicted of attempting to attack the parliament in 2012, Joseph Juma Odhiambo, who was arrested in 2019 at the border between Kenya and Somalia for planning to join the Somali terror group Al-Shabaab, and Mohamed Ali Abikar, who was convicted for his role in Al-Shabaab's attack on Garissa University in April 2015. That attack killed at least 148 people, most of them students. Kenyan media reports the three men were trying to reach Somalia and had asked people for directions to Garissa. Bob Mukangi, a constitutional lawyer, said the terror convicts will be treated like other prison escapees.
So it's a penal code that determines what the court can pronounce against you. And as I said, it's treated as a misdemeanor, which about 2 to 3 years sentence. But as I was saying, now when you go back to prison, the prison authorities, under the guidance of the Prison Services Act and how they treat different convicts, then you foresee the prison services taking extra measures to ensure that they are secure.
Before their escape, the three men were housed with more ordinary criminals inside Kamiti Prison. The escape prompted Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta to fire the head of prisons, Wycliffe Ogalo, on Wednesday. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Today is Friday, November 19. The death toll from Sunday's attack by militants on Burkina Faso military police has risen to 53. The attack is the deadliest on security forces during Burkina Faso's six-year-long battle with Islamist militants, and critics are calling for the president to resign. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
Burkina Faso's communications minister said Thursday that 49 military police and 4 civilians were killed in the attack on a military police base in the north. A security source told VOA Thursday morning that the death toll is likely to rise further. The attack was the deadliest for the country's security forces since the battle between the government and armed groups linked to the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda and local bandits began 6 years ago. The event has caused a public outcry and small protests, with about 300 people taking to the streets of Ouagadougou on Tuesday. Adama Tiendre Bogo was one of the protesters. Politically, we say that President Kabore has failed in his responsibilities. He took an oath to protect the Burkinabe people, who he has failed. So we think he has to leave. Asked what the mood was among those who had joined the protest, he said, people think it's a pity that for 6 years the country has been at war and we are still fighting, so there are no solutions. There is no hope, no prospects. The Burkinabe people feel abandoned by their captain. The Minister of Communication did not immediately respond to requests for a comment. Meanwhile, the opposition has called for the president, Roch Kabore, to resign. A statement by Eddie Conwego, leader of the opposition CDP party on Tuesday, said the situation arose because of the notorious incompetence of the Kabore regime. The government is keen to be seen as taking action. During a cabinet meeting yesterday, the president sought to blame shortcomings in the military police for the attack. 2 security personnel responsible for the northern area of the country where the attack took place were subsequently removed from their posts on Wednesday. The president also suggested that food supply issues in the military were a problem and needed to be dealt with. An unverified document, which appeared to have been leaked from the military, circulated on social media earlier this week. It showed the base in Annata, where the attack happened, had been suffering from food supply issues for 2 weeks. Personnel from the base were said to have been forced to slaughter local animals for food. Andrew Lebovich is an analyst with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
On the security front, I think this shows how difficult it has been and how much trouble the government has had, even in the face of ongoing security operations, to confront and to deal with the militant threat, particularly near the borders with Mali and Niger. It really is, in many places, a quite dire security situation still.
More protests are expected to take place next week. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Authorities in Cameroon say fewer than 300 of a targeted 300,000 state workers have agreed to be vaccinated against COVID-19 2 weeks into a campaign. Some civil servants who spoke to VOA hold a mistaken belief that the virus is no longer a threat in Cameroon. But health officials say vaccinations in the Central African state must be stepped up amid concerns about another wave of infections. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Several dozen people enter and leave Cameroon's Public Service and Administrative Reform Ministry Thursday morning. At the ministry's courtyard is a new stand where civil servants can get COVID-19 vaccines free of charge. Vaccination team member Roland Jala says only 11 of the expected 400 ministry employees have volunteered to be vaccinated over the past 10 days.
People are afraid, they don't know the side effects of the vaccine. I think that is the principal problem.
Cameroon officially launched a one-month campaign to vaccinate at least half of its 600,000 active and retired government workers against COVID-19, November 10. The Public Health Ministry says it has vaccinated just 300 of the 300,000 expected active and former state workers. Public Service and Administrative Reform Minister Joseph Lee says he is pleading with workers to accept the COVID-19 vaccine.
This campaign is intended to ensure that the professional environment is not a place where the virus spreads, but a suitable environment for professional development for all of us.
Cameroon announced last month that the COVID-19 Delta variant was present in the country and infection rates were increasing. The health ministry is encouraging people to be vaccinated and continue to wear face masks, wash their hands regularly, and keep at least a meter from each other. The Cameroon Bar Association said last month that some government officials were blocking unvaccinated civilians from public offices. Evaristus Mofong Kafu, president of the General Assembly of the Cameroon Bar Association, says no law compels public service users to provide vaccination cards.
There are some authorities who have decided that those who are not inoculated will not enter into their premises. It means they are discriminating against Cameroonians.
The government denied that it is compelling people to be vaccinated. It is definitely encouraging the jabs. Only 0.5% of the targeted 12 million people were fully vaccinated as of October 30. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
After the 2020 season decimated the tourism industry in Cape Verde, which depends highly on tourists for its income, the government is looking to expand its private economy in other areas. One area is technology, with Cape Verde Digital, a public institution in charge of helping businesses with connectivity and other tech arenas. Milton Cabral, spokesperson for the government agency, tells Ricky Stryak that one aspect of their work is to support the country's newly implemented remote work visa.
The purpose of Cape Verde Digital is actually to promote the digital entrepreneurship in country. Supporting startups and young entrepreneurs in their journey, their entrepreneurial journey.
Given 2020's unique situation and Cabo Verde's reliance on tourism as an economic engine, what kind of expansion are you guys hoping to facilitate in the country when it comes to businesses?
Country. As a whole, it's now trying to redefine our strategy in terms of development and giants. As you mentioned, tourism is the main and was and still the main contributor for the GDP in country. And with the pandemic the pandemic situation, basically, we was forced to push our citizen and push the country to go digital and make some investments and create some initiatives to create this awareness and this mindset shift from our entrepreneurs and also from our citizens. And we are in this journey, basically. The government is making a huge investment and have very ambitious vision to transform the country as a platform for service providing for our sub-region, tech service providing for our sub-region, trying to establish also a country as a kind of connectivity hub. We are bringing a bunch of sea to marine cable to create redundancies in terms of for the country, for connectivity. These focus on not only create a kind of critical mass in country in terms of talent and culture, but also we are trying to attract a different kind of tourism.
That was Milton Cabra, a spokesperson for Cape Verde Digital. You're speaking to Ricky Stryer from Praia. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CAF Women's Champions League. Morocco's Asfra on Thursday won the third place in the maiden edition of the Toto CAF Women's Champions League, beating Equatorial Guinea's Malabo Kings 3-1 at the 30 June Stadium in Cairo. Later on Friday, it will be South African champions Mamelodi Sundowns Ladies who will face Ghanaian outfit Hasaka's Ladies FC in the CAF Women's Champions League final after winning their semi-final on penalties on Monday night. Jerry Shabalala, head coach of Mamelodi Sundowns Ladies FC of South Africa, has tipped his team to win the maiden edition of the CAF Women's Champions League against Hasaka's Ladies of Ghana.
I know Hasaka's. I've seen Hasaka's how they play. It's going to be a crunch game. It's going to be a nice one. It's good for women's football. Let's promote women's football. We're ready for this game.
Football governing body FIFA has given Ghana 3 days to respond to allegations of match-fixing made against them by the South African Football Association. It follows South Africa's elimination from the 2022 World Cup qualifiers during the last group match with Ghana last Sunday. Ghana and South Africa clashed in the deciding Group G 2022 World Cup qualifier at the Cape Coast Stadium, where Ghana won 1-0 through a controversial 31st-minute penalty that was awarded to the host by Senegalese referee Maguiti Ndiaye and converted by Andre Ayew. Ghana Football Association President Kurt Okraku, who responded to the allegation by the South Africans, described the allegation as baseless and frivolous.
South Africa must not be bad losers. They must not be sour losers. They must understand that they didn't plan enough, they didn't play well enough, they didn't win enough games, for which reason they were not good enough against our gallant Black Stars.
Staying with football news, Nigerian Minister of Youth and Sport, Sunday Dare, has said that the Nigerian Football Federation will decide the fate of the Super Eagles head coach, Genrot Raw, next week. The minister stated this on Thursday at the weekly ministerial briefing in Abuja, the nation's capital. According to the minister, the Super Eagles coach's future with the Super Eagles will depend on the report to be submitted by the NFF in the coming days after the coach came under intense criticism following the performance of the Super Eagles in their last game against Cape Verde. In other sports news, Namibia will co-host the Cricket World Cup alongside South Africa and Zimbabwe in 2027. It will be the first time that Namibia will co-host a major international World Cup tournament and the first time in 24 years that the Cricket World Cup returns to Africa. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, November 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.